So what if you could hang out with really talented copywriters and other experts, ask them about their successes and failures, their work processes, and their habits, then steal an idea or two to inspire your own work? That's what Rob and I try to do every week at the Copywriter Club podcast.
You're invited to join the club for episode 2 as we chat with copywriter to the stars, Rye Schwartz, about writing for big name clients, being un-Googleable, and his process for putting himself in the shoes of the people he writes to and for.
Hey, Rob and Rye.
Hey, Kara.
Like, copywriter to the stars. Like, how much do I owe you for that new branding slogan?
Yeah. I wonder what you would think about that. Like,
yeah.
That was incredible.
So good.
Yeah. So true. Hey, Ryan, maybe, you know, other than the introduction that I've given, you're sort of this hidden away copywriter.
Yes.
Nobody can find. And we'll maybe talk about that in a minute. But I would love to hear the Rye story, like how you became a copywriter. Because I'm imagining that, you know, when you were 7 years old, you know, you weren't thinking, I am going to be a copywriter. I am going to, you know, write emails for a living, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean,
what's the story?
Like when I was 7 years old, you know, like Uncle Gene used to take me on fishing trips. And, you know, I actually read the first copy of Breakthrough Advertising when I was 2. So
there you go. That's all, you had it coming.
I had it coming. No, I am not related to Gene Schwartz. Sometimes I refer to him as my uncle just for fun. But no, I actually got started pretty late-ish, I guess. You know, I do have a business-ish background. You know, I did my undergrad in marketing for whatever that was worth, which turned out to be pretty much nothing. And and yeah, right out of college, you know, got a corporate job, you know, the typical cubicle hell kind of thing. And for those 2 years, it was all about kind of escaping that. You know, it was literally like I used to refer to that job as Shawshank, you know, and I was digging my way out with a plastic spoon every day. And this was right around 2007, 2008, which was a perfect time to jump ship, you know, if you weren't being forced off the ship. And I remember I wasn't being forced off the ship, which was really alarming. And people were getting laid off every day and people were disappearing. And I remember like, this was my perfect opportunity to try to get laid off, you know, and try to at least make an exit with a bit of a severance package. And right around the same time, yeah, it was 2007, I think the movie Benjamin Button came out. I don't know if you guys have seen it, but
love it. Yeah.
Yeah. Brad Pitt reverse aging. And the funny thing about that movie was like about 5 years ago, I remember being in a coffee shop and, you know, talking to one of my good friends and like, I think I said like, what if there was a movie about a guy who reverse aged? Like, how cool would that be? And then when I first saw the trailer to that, like my heart sunk and I'm like, Hollywood stole it. Like, screw Brad Pitt. And I was ready to like go to the producer's place with my pitchfork and, you know, like just accuse them of, you know, plagiarism, even though it was impossible. And I remember, you know, the timing was perfect. That came out and I'm like, you know, I will never let Hollywood beat me to a movie idea again. Like, I'm going to learn how to write this stuff. So while I was trying to get laid off from that job, I just really self-taught screenwriting, you know, and I was writing my first script on the job, trying to get laid off. I think the script was about me trying to get laid off.
Nice.
And ultimately, I didn't get laid off, but I ended up having to quit. And then from there, I actually pursued screenwriting full-time for about 3 years and really flirted with success right out of the gates, which was both, you know, an amazing thing and a bit of a curse because it just kind of strung me along long enough for literally 3 years thinking that that break was coming. You know, I had projects that got traction and picked up and various people attached, and it was promising enough to make me remain in there without being deluded, or at least thinking that I was being deluded. So that was an interesting process. But meanwhile, you know, like money wasn't coming in. It was really kind of hard on some relationships at the time. And also just kind of my personal self-esteem, you know, like how much longer can I convince myself that that big break and big paycheck was around the corner? So I was taking all sorts of odd jobs around there. I was the guy, you know, cutting grass in the summer, you know, and wondering, like, he must have dropped out of high school. Yeah, you know, stuff like flooring and all sorts of, like, stuff that you really don't feel like you should be doing. And it was kind of really depressing at that age. At that point, I was already kind of in my mid-20s and just not feeling good about that. You know, I started looking for jobs on Craigslist, and the copywriter kept coming up, you know, on a lot of those jobs. And I had no idea what that was. All I knew is that it had the word writer in it. And that was something that I was doing with relative success for the last few years. So yeah, I applied to one of them, got an interview, still didn't know what a copywriter was, but just kind of BS'd my way through the hiring process and got the job. So I got the job. I got hired in an agency as a copywriter, not knowing what it was. And I come in the first day. I come in about an hour early. I realize, I see that they actually gave me a really nice big office, and I'm like, holy crap, this gig might be more important than I thought it was.
Right.
Yeah. So I locked myself in there, and I remember turning on the computer, really anxious, waiting for it to load. I think it was like, you know, an old OS, and it was just taking longer than it should have. And it finally came up. I opened up Internet Explorer, Google popped up, and I typed in, what is copywriting? And that's really where the journey began. And
there's got to be so many people listening to this thinking, oh my gosh, are you kidding me?
Yeah, that's how it started. And Copy Hackers Joanna had some serious SEO game because she owned that term that popped up. And literally, I learned enough to get by through the first day. And then every day, I just kind of kept returning and learning enough to get through the next day. And literally, when you're like in their trial by fire, and you have to really kind of absorb enough to really survive, you know, it just happens really fast. And, you know, I picked it up, you know, thankfully, it was something that came very naturally too. It wasn't so much of a struggle to really get into the swing of it. And I was already a confident writer. So it was really about kind of reapplying it within the context of, you know, persuasion and writing copy that converts. So I was lucky in that sense, but it was stressful that first week, you know, just, you know, like, I mean, you talk about imposter syndrome. I was literally the imposter. It was not a syndrome. It was, right. It was not a mindset thing. I did not need a mindset coach. I needed a copywriting education, and I needed one really freaking fast. So that's really how it got started. You know, I was in that gig for about a year, and then went more freelance. I probably went freelance a little premature. Got a lot of kind of local jobs, you know, yoga studios, and I think my favorite one was like a mattress company, like the most boring copy job possible, where I literally paid more in gas money to drive to their head office than I did make on, you know, what I wrote. But I was just kind of happy for any client. And then I really got, you know, my start in the online world through, at the time, it was called Fire Pole Marketing, owned by Danny Eney, who some of our listeners may know.
Yeah.
You know, I was listening to one of his webinars. You know, he was talking all about, you know, starting an audience business. And, you know, that was something that was really intriguing to me at the time. And at the beginning of the webinar, you know, they do the whole, so where are you guys calling in from? And of course, you know, being a newbie, I thought that people actually cared when they said that. So yeah, I wrote in Montreal, and he happened to be there too. And that kind of blew my mind. And he mentioned it, and I go on his site, and it turned out, you know, not only were we in the same city, but we were around the block, which just, you know, kind of felt like a sign from the universe. So we connected. Ended up really being mentored and came into his business in-house. And that was really my deep dive education into direct response and email and online marketing and, you know, all the things that have really served me over the last 3 years and been the real basis for what I do now. So, yeah, that is kind of the condensed story.
Wow. I love that story. It's the second time I heard that story, and I think I love it even more this time. And Rye, I think, you know, you came to Sonoma when Rob and I were there with the Copy Hackers Mastermind, and that's where we met in person. And I was just looking at my notes before jumping on this call. I had taken so many from your workshop, and I didn't realize how that workshop and the content you shared with us, how it's already impacted my work. until I looked back at those notes. And a big part of that is around forgiveness and what you taught us about forgiving the reader. And I think that stood out to me the most. And I've talked about it with people since then, too. And I think that could be a really powerful lesson to share with our community. So if I know it's huge and we can't cover all of it, but if you could just kind of give an overview of the role that forgiveness can play in copywriting today.
Yes.
Forgive us for not having time to cover it, you know, as well as it should be.
Right. I will forgive all, I mean, you guys have to forgive all blunders here in trying to condense this, but essentially it really all starts with drilling down into pain. You know, we speak so much about pain points as copywriters, but pain is a pretty broad sweeping thing that really deserves kind of really zooming into the various shades of it, you know, and then when you look at the various shades, you see some guilt. You see some shame, you see some regret, and that's really where a lot of the juice comes and where there's a lot of opportunity to give value to your reader, to give value to your prospect and have them kind of heal a wound that simultaneously allows them to have the opportunity to be a buyer. You know, I speak a lot about coaching the conversion. You know, conversion, you know, buying is a behavior. It's an action. It's a new state where they believe things they didn't believe before, and they've forgiven or released themselves from previous patterns that would obstruct them from being able to do that. So I always do kind of like, you know, and we might talk a little bit more about my process, but, you know, with every project, I usually have a set of about 21 questions that I really fill out myself that allow me to drill deeper onto these points. And one of them is, what does the reader need to forgive themselves for in order to buy? You know, a lot of it has to do with, you know, past decisions they've made that they may not be proud of as it relates to that product. Sometimes it's about what they deem to be procrastination and feeling like, you know, they've failed and they've let people down, you know, and we carry a lot of guilt and shame around that as well. One example I think I've given was, you know, when writing for it was a natural dietary treatment or a holistic treatment for antidepression, you know, and a lot of people carry regret around their decision to get on medication. You know, it could have been 10 years ago and it could have been impulsive and they did it for that immediate relief, you know, knowing that there could be some long-term consequences and that it was kind of a short-term fix, but that short-term fix became a long-term destabilizing thing that they kind of really regret. So part of that campaign was about recognizing that built-in bias they have, you know, because buying the natural product would, you know, in turn mean admitting that they've made a bad decision in the past, you know, and that's not something that a lot of people want to confront. So you really have to give them that opportunity. I really kind of, one resource that I talk a lot about was Viktor Frankl's Man's Search for Meaning. And, you know, I have a little twist on it, Market Search for Meaning. You know, what previous supposedly negative events can we reframe and really get them to know that was probably the best thing they could do at the time. But now, so we validate that decision and we create that kind of meaning loop. We give meaning to that. But in order to close it, they need to stay consistent with this positive decision making and go to that next thing. So it's kind of like one of those, it's not your fault until it is. You know, it wasn't your fault then because you made the best and maybe only decision you had at the time. But now that you're presented with a better opportunity, you know, it is on you and there is a certain accountability to really act on it. So that's really what I mean by kind of giving the prospects a chance to forgive themselves, you know, inviting them to do that. And it comes down to really knowing that story, knowing their story around what you're selling. And yeah, it seems to really kind of, you know, they experience it as those, oh my God, they get me moments. You know, that's what the reader really kind of perceives it as, is they feel so heard and so seen and so empathized with and invited to really release that guilt that they may not have even had the emotional awareness to know is there. So that becomes powerful when you could reveal something in them and active in them that they really didn't have a chance to address before. And that trust, you know, to me, that is the trust you're looking to generate in a campaign. You know, we talk about trust as, you know, one of Cialdini's triggers, and, you know, we tend to really kind of address that by having, you know, guarantees and testimonials and influencers and all that. But no, to me, trust in its most powerful form is really just their trust in your ability to solve it, their problem, in a powerful way. And that comes from them really, truly believing that you understand everything about their context and their pain and how it arose. So hope that answers it.
No, it does. And I know we want to get into your process and how you even understand their pain before you can coach them through the conversion. But just to kind of wrap this up with forgiveness, do you feel like this is where a lot of copywriters miss out on an opportunity to convert and to really move someone to take action? Because I feel like I read a lot of copy as trying to learn, and I don't see the forgiveness aspect often. Mm-hmm. I definitely always see it in your copy. But do you feel like that's an opportunity to improve our copy overall?
Yeah, I feel it is. I feel like, you know, at the most basic level, it is a way of showing them that we understand their complete context. And I think, you know, there's a lot of missed opportunities when we take, you know, our data, survey responses, you know, all that stuff at face level without sitting with it long enough and really dissecting it. And really, you know, I treat data and survey responses as the tip of the iceberg. You know, I don't just kind of take it wholesale and reflect that back. You know, if I see a meaty piece of, you know, data in whatever form it comes, I always try to sit with that long enough to see everything underneath it. You know, what led them to say that? You know, and that's where it becomes really, really telling. And it could be time consuming, you know, it could be time consuming to really mull over, you know, that sort of stuff and really empathize with it. But, you know, as kind of maybe you experienced in Sonoma, like, it doesn't have to take so long, you know, and you don't have to do it over every piece of data that comes into your hands, you know, because there's so much overlap between those customer stories, you know, and you should be treating it as that one customer anyway. So just sit with it long enough to pierce below that surface, you know. Don't take survey responses at face level. See what is the backstory that led them to saying that, you know. And, you know, I'm going over some of it right now, actually. We have a bunch of survey responses about people who went to this live business growth event, and a lot of people are saying, you know, they were really happy that it was intimate and they got to really meet people firsthand and they really got to kind of get some focused attention. And, you know, I could easily write the copy, you know, and take some of that and say, you get more, you know, individual one-on-one attention than any other event, you know. Or I could go deeper and say, okay, so if they're saying that this feels more intimate, what have they experienced in the past, you know, that wasn't so great, you know? And maybe they didn't want to be the person in the corner looking at their Facebook newsfeed while everyone else mingles because they're introverted. And, you know, maybe they've gone back on the plane home trying to convince themselves that it was money well spent when secretly they know they have, you know, a few notes that they'll never look back on and no relationships, you know, that are going to be meaningful. And they've just kind of tried to convince themselves that it was worth their while. So, yeah, just things like that. And I'm not saying those are perfect examples, but it's just a way to kind of orient your thinking to really drill deeper. Whenever you have something, just go one level deeper and kind of see what was the precursor to that feeling or that event or emotion. And that's kind of where you really kind of get to stand out and where you get to kind of, I think one of my clients kind of said it in a way that I love best. It's like your third eye has been activated, you know? And, you know, there's nothing mystical about it. It's just, you know, it's that patience to really kind of savor the process instead of this mechanical, rigid, I need to churn out X amount of work per day because I have all these other clients on backlog. You know, it's really when you just kind of allow yourself to sit in the process instead of being, you know, thinking purely from a productivity standpoint, I think you just open yourself up to those insights, which in turn make it more productive in the long run because the writing becomes easier, the results become better, and ultimately, you know, those clients become lifelong clients and you don't have to kind of do all the other things that, you know, spin from having to find new clients all the time. So, yeah.
Seems like a really powerful tool for a writer to have, you know, in their toolbox to be able to go through that. So I want to unpack that just a little bit, Rai. You've mentioned a few things, story. You've talked a little bit about your process. You know, I've noticed in reading some of the emails that you've done for Amy Porterfield and the work that you've done with Joanna and some others that your emails seem to really focus on a really emotional story. And it really sort of hits home when you're reading this. You really identify with what you're saying. You know, oh yeah, this is really talking to me. And so I'm curious about, in addition to the steps, you know, for identifying the things that you need to forgive, what does your process look like, and where do you come up with the story that you then translate into an email sequence?
That's a great question. You know, my process is probably the thing I'm most insecure about as a copywriter. You know, I wish I had this kind of A to Z process of, okay, like client intake, and then I do this, and this. And I wish I had that, you know, and I've tried many times to really kind of solidify that. You know, I know how, you know, being able to surrender to that could take out a lot of guesswork and make sure that, you know, no loose ends are missed. But yeah, I mean, I'm constantly reinventing it. I'd say that the only real constants I have are, you know, I have that list of questions, you know, that I journal on. You know, it's kind of like journaling for your business, journaling for your market. And that's really kind of my first major step, is answering this list of questions, you know, like the one we spoke about before, what do they need to forgive themselves for? And usually, you know, those are going to be really, really telling, and those are really going to kind of show me where I might be a little bit in the dark around the market, and where I need to have more conversations with the client, or we need to get more data or whatever. So yeah, I really do start kind of from a question answering thing, you know, me personally, you know, and usually once I've cultivated that and have really kind of steeped in who this audience is, you know, and I say this in a much different way than just writing a two-dimensional, you know, avatar on a page. I really do try to embody that. You know, once I've written and journaled about it, I try to steepen it for the duration of that project and reflect that back to my client, you know, so I'll do a little kind of role play with them and try to talk to them as if I'm their client, you know, and sometimes I'll reverse it and give them a chance to do it as well, so that we could get kind of a more complete picture of it. So it sounds more like a softer, more qualitative process, and to a certain degree it is. But I feel like that's where there's the biggest chance to really get those key insights and stand out, you know, because the hard data is easier and easier to get. You know, that's becoming kind of more the norm. You know, that's not the hard stuff to really find right now. It's really tapping deeper into it and really making it a more holistic process. And from there, you know, really the stories and the angles I choose, you know, this is where I'm going to be a little more vague and just say that when you are steeped in it, you know, the inspiration comes from just about anywhere. When you know, when you've pinpointed what your prospect needs to believe in order to become a buyer, I mean, the hooks will come from your Facebook newsfeed. You know, some of my most successful emails were like, you know, coming from the place where, okay, my prospect needs to believe that shortcuts aren't worth it, you know, and then I'm scrolling and, you know, clip-on man buns comes on, you know, like that's a pretty ridiculous thing that happens when you take shortcuts, you know, and then, you know, that actually became the main hook in one of the stories.
I'm throwing away my clip-on man bun right
but
now.
You wear it so well, Rob. Yeah. I had no idea it was a fake one. I mean, it looked natural. Yeah, so, you know, I never really kind of sit down and really kind of try to generate stories on demand. Those are really just naturally emerging of really, once I've steeped in kind of the beliefs I need them to have by the time, you know, this campaign is done. I mean, the truth is there are thousands, if not countless millions of ways to illustrate those points, you know. One thing I will do usually with new clients is really kind of have a what I call kind of a first date call, you know, where I'll pretend we just kind of both swipe right on Tinder and we'll just kind of talk and I'll kind of find out more about kind of their personal lives and really be able to bring that into the fold, which I feel is, it's not easy to do at first when obviously we are copywriters and we write in other people's names, which is pretty much the most intimate thing you could do in business with your pants still on. Like when you really,
right?
Yeah. And, you know, I think that's something that felt very natural when I started working with clients, but seemed to really kind of blow their mind is like, why is this person really making this effort to get to know me on such a personal level and on such an intimate level? And to me, that just felt like kind of a prerequisite, you know, like if I'm going to be writing in this person's name and making that feel authentic and real and bringing their stories into the fold, I need to be friends with this person. Like there's no other way around it. Like I can't even spend a few minutes embodying someone I dislike, you know? So, you know, it's an intimate job. And I feel that it's an intimate job from the perspective of, you know, our clients, and it's an intimate job, you know, with our prospect. And I think that the only way to really thrive is to develop those, not just develop, but kind of allow those empathetic chops to surface instead of making it so mechanical. So, yeah, that's a big part of my process, just really kind of journaling on those questions for myself, allowing insights to emerge, allowing, you know, taking enough showers for the story hooks to just kind of pop up through there, really having as many conversations as I need with my clients, a lot of personal conversations with them, first date type stuff, role playing, you know, based on kind of those insights and just reflecting it back. And, you know, then of course I will get into kind of the more, I guess, the more technical aspects of writing. You know, I will create outlines, you know, for my emails. I will outline the whole sequence, you know, and what each part of it is trying to achieve. What each email is selling. So I will get more technical there. But really, for me, I think when I really kind of look at how much time I spend on anything, it's really about 70% that, you know, that deeper, more qualitative work, and 30%, you know, the actual writing, you know, which just comes so much quicker once I've done all that stuff in advance.
Right. I like the way that you describe that. It's really an intimate experience for both of you when you're working together. I think it's easy to forget that, especially if you are taking on more clients than you can handle in a month. You don't take the time needed to really get to know them. And so I know that resonated with me and has already changed the way that I speak to my clients and spend time with them and really get to know them. I'd love to know, if you don't mind sharing, some of the questions you may ask them during that initial call or early on in the process. I know you have some great questions that really pull out some of their stories and personal information that other copywriters may not ask. Maybe even feels like, oh, I shouldn't ask that. But I know you go there and you use it and you use it in such a powerful way.
Yeah. You know what? I don't have a list of specific questions that I ask my clients. You know, I tend to kind of embody my inner Oprah and just kind of go to the places it takes. But yeah, not being afraid to ask the questions like, what, you know, where do they feel most insecure in their business? You know, where, like, I really like pulling things out that draw out that vulnerability as well. You know, I think that's where you get a lot of juicy detail. And not every client is willing to go there, you know, and it gets awkward when, like, they're like, I wanted a copywriter, not a life coach, you know.
Yeah, I can imagine.
You know, and it sometimes goes there, but ultimately, you know, I'm pretty adamant about continuing that process just because I know that I'll do my best work when I have access to those insights. And that's actually the relationship that is most fulfilling for me from a client copywriter perspective. You know, I need to really enjoy that process, and it's okay to have your list of qualities you seek in a partner, you know? So, you know, what do I ask? You know, I'll start off kind of really getting to know what brought them into that business, what really excites them most about it, what they were doing before, what was kind of that trigger point or that catalyst that got them into that line of work. what they admire most about their market. You know, what has touched them most as a business owner? You know, what is their long-term plan? What breaks their heart most about that market, you know, and the struggles of that market? And that's usually the one that actually draws a lot of insights. What breaks your heart most about the market you serve? Tears have been shed over that one, you know, and I mean, it's a question I ask myself all the time, you know, what really breaks my heart about this market? And that's where you go from just kind of these two-dimensional benign pain points to, holy crap, this is a living experience with real people who are in real despair, and there's some emotional weight there. And I think I said this in Sonoma, but like, it's worth saying again, like, I don't write until I feel like crap, until like I almost want to puke, until I have this guttural, visceral reaction that this world is not okay. And unless
very, very Hemingway of you, I think
that's why I only take one job per year and then just go out into the forest and drink like, gallons and gallons of whiskey. I say that as I look at this like old antique typewriter on my desk, and I'm like, I'm not. I am. I'm a poser. that's really it. You know, really feeling deeply into my client's experience of the market and how they're serving it, which becomes really, really telling. And also empathy on the other end of the spectrum. Yeah, tapping into that audience and going beyond pains. What is the experience of the pain, you know, beyond the label of it?
Right. If I could shift gears for a minute, you know, at the top of the show, I introduced you as a copywriter to the stars. And I was sort of trying to be a little bit funny, but the fact of the matter is that you write a lot of copy for some pretty big names in the internet space. Amy Porterfield has, I think, mentioned that you are one of the secrets to her success two or three different times on her podcast. You know, I know you've done a successful launch with Joanna at Copy Hackers. You've worked with several other, you know, big names, people doing, you know, really remarkable things online, million-dollar launches type kind of stuff. I'm curious, how did you get there? You know, how do you get to be the writer for someone like Amy Porterfield? You know, what does that take? You know, where does it start, and what are the steps to get there?
Yeah, that's a really, really good question, Rob. You know, I'd say 3 years ago, or maybe two to 3 years ago, when I really started getting those bigger names, if you will, I never really had a strategic step-by-step plan for doing it. And I know that's not helpful, so I am going to try to elaborate a little more on, you know, maybe even reverse engineer how some of those names came to be clients. But I feel the experience of working with a copywriter is generally not an enjoyable one, especially for business owners who are running successful companies who are really busy. You know, it's something that they just don't even expect to enjoy. And when you do deliver that experience, you know, really kind of acknowledging and honoring the intimacy of that relationship, getting to know them as more than, you know, people who sign your checks, it really becomes kind of a buzzworthy experience, especially if you're getting results for them, you know. And the way our kind of online world is becoming more and more connected, not online, but how these business owners are craving more and more in-person connection. And you see that with the growth of masterminds, which have exploded over the past 2 years.
Yeah.
You know, everyone is connecting and jumping on planes and meeting like four times a year. And those experiences get spoken about and often, you know, and that's how I've really managed to get by without any kind of online presence is there's even the joy and the discovery in having your name whispered about, and then they kind of try to track you down, and it feels very exclusive that way. And it wasn't something I cultivated, but it was kind of a happy byproduct of me having no WordPress skills more than anything. So, you know, it's really been a process of, yes, I probably was lucky to get my first big name, you know, but that kind of came through persistence. You know, the first big client, I guess you could say, was my in-house job with Firepole Marketing. They were doing really, really well at the time. Danny was super hyper connected in that space. And you know, that came from, you know, me being on the webinar, me kind of getting on that radar, continuing the conversation after the webinar. You know, it could have probably been expedited if I was a customer of that product and not afraid to just like pay to play a little bit there. And then just, yeah, getting on that radar. The truth is, like, people need good copywriters. And like, it's just, it's fascinating and it keeps blowing my mind how underserved our markets really are. And it doesn't matter what space you're in, the, you know, the need for skilled, talented, fun, and easy to work with copywriters who will actually deliver on what they say is so huge. And, you know, as long as you're giving people that experience, you are going to get spoken about. You know, they may be reluctant to speak about you because you're their secret weapon and they don't want your bandwidth going elsewhere. But, you know, I mean, it started with one big client and the rest was just really referral based. I think a lot of people talking about me in their masterminds, in their private little inner circles, that's really how it grew. So, you know, if I were to start over today, you know, and this could be a really meaty solution for anyone really trying to build their roster of clients in a fast way, is look at maybe two or three events that business owners attend, you know, especially in your market, you know, and like, the way I would frame it is like not events of other copywriters, but events where people are being sold on going to the gold mine, you know, without the shovel, you know? So like in my market, that might be, you know, Jeff Walker's product launch intensive, you know, or Ryan Levesque's Ask Masterclass or whatever. You're literally getting hundreds and hundreds of business owners who are being told to build these like crazy intricate online funnels, and then they're so enchanted by that, and then they get there, and then by day two they're like, holy crap, I need to write 60 emails now, I don't know how to do that. And their faces just kind of sink and they panic, and that's where you're literally the rock star of the event. And I've been to a few events this past year where, like, you know, I'm pretty introverted, I don't go in there, you know, with I never brought a business card to an event, but the second someone hears that you're a copywriter, like, people will flock, you know, and it's, especially if you're at one of those events that's not a for copywriters specifically, but for, you know, business owners in the industry you serve who have just become enlightened to how much copy they need and how crucial it is for the success of what they're doing. So that's what I would do if I was really kind of trying to build that roster out today. You know, that's the thing. Like, the need is, you know, higher than ever, really. You know, people are really looking to build more and more intricate funnels with all sorts of segmentation built in and different tracks and different automations. And, like, they just don't have the bandwidth to do it. They don't even know how to hire it out. So if you're just kind of available, you know, to them, you know, either through those in-person meetings or just you've worked with people in their circle.
Right, you know, place, right time kind of a thing.
Right place, right time, but it's that right place is getting bigger than ever, and the right time is becoming pretty much 24/7, you know, so yeah. It's not so hard to find that mark. And then it's just really about delivering that stellar experience, you know, both from, you know, how you deliver, you know, professionally, and also just the experience of hiring a copywriter. You know, that's part of really what you're selling. You're selling the experience of a feeling confident that this major aspect of their business is going to be taken care of and they're going to feel taken care of. So, yeah, that's really about it. I don't have any kind of other lead generation method other than that right now. So,
well, I'm curious, right? I mean, you're going to these events, you have big name clients, so a lot of people want to work with you at this point in your business. Mm-hmm. And so I would love to know how you structure your business so that you have the space to really do the type of powerful work that you've been talking about, take the time to really become your avatar. That all takes time and energy. And if a lot of people want your services, how are you structuring your business so that you're only taking on a couple clients at a time? I guess I just want to know what that looks like for you, and because it's assuming that it's working for you, because I know that's what I feel overwhelmed as I plan out my calendar. I usually pack in more than I can handle. Any advice you have there is, I'm grateful.
Yeah, so it's a bit of a weak point for me as well. If there's one area that I'd say I could do a lot better on is, you know, estimating my bandwidth better, spacing out projects better, more effectively.
Yeah.
You know, that's one place I think that is kind of a, I mean, you become a victim of your own success at some point.
Right.
But what I do try to do, however, is, you know, only really try to book 65% of my capacity, like no more than that, you know, so like no more than one major project per month. If it only takes 2 weeks, then, you know, then all of a sudden I'm able to kind of reach out to other people I've put on the back burner and say, this slot just opened, you know, I have a few days right now. Do you want to work together? You know? But yeah, and I mean, the other thing, if I do know that I am going to be, you know, lining up a job like more than 3 months out, you know, that's where I could really kind of engage the client in a lot more of the preliminary legwork. You know, there's, you know, I'll give them a chance to participate in those questions that I'd be journaling about. I'll have some more kind of like frequent conversations with them and really kind of delve even deeper. So I do get to do a lot of that groundwork in the meantime until the physical writing actually does happen. But yeah, granted, I mean, you're not going to close like all those clients who need you now and you're not available. And ultimately, you know, I think like, I've met a lot of copywriters who, and I'm included in this bunch, that just really want to please, you know, and it's so hard to not just kind of say no, but to like leave somebody hanging. And especially because we've all started from a place where we weren't booked up, you know, and we were grateful for any, you know, gig and opportunity that fell on our table. And like that script is still active. You know, I have trouble, you know, saying, no, I'm not available for a contract that, you know, I know could be 5 figures a year. Like that's scary still, you know, and ultimately you just have to kind of really be honest with yourself and the lifestyle you want to live and the service you want to be able to give. And for me, that's really max like one big project per month, really embody that. I mean, at that point, you're giving a lot of value and you obviously should be charging accordingly for that, to the point where if that's the only gig of that month, that's still a good month. You know, you don't need to kind of fill your calendar and jam pack it with 8 other clients in order to hit your financial goals. So that's kind of an important thing to reverse engineer too, is the more intimate and deeper work you give and the more value you provide and the more revenue you help someone generate, just really kind of make sure that you're charging accordingly, you know, to make that relationship in balance and to make it so that you don't have to work, you know, 80-hour work weeks to hit your targets. So yeah, I would say that, you know, fee structure is definitely built into giving yourself that space to honor, you know, your current clients. And then the other thing is, like, be truthful with yourself. Like, do you want any more clients? And it's tough to say no, because for the majority of your career up to now, it's been, yes, I do want more clients. But, you know, is there anything really to be gained in going from 5 to 10 clients or 10 to 15 clients? Or is the opportunity to double down on the ones you already have, give more value and earn more through that, you know, possible? So, yeah. And I mean, if by adding new clients and onboarding more clients, that's going to kind of take you away from growing in the intimacy and the relationship with your current ones, is that really worth it to pursue? So, yeah, I wish I had a more elegant solution. I really don't. I'm still pretty much, it's still pretty much guerrilla warfare, you know, for me when it comes to kind of spacing it out. But I just try to create as much time and space and flexibility between, you know, gigs as possible, and always kind of overestimate. I've learned to overestimate the time it would take to deliver and allow a little more cushion. So
sort of a battle we're all fighting, I think. But
yeah.
We're sort of running low on time, but I want to ask what I feel is a really important question. And so, you know, as concise as we can answer this, what does a typical project look like for you? And How do you price that for your clients? You know, if I have a course that I want to launch and I know I want to do something like the product launch formula, how do you outline that? And what does that proposal look that you send back to your client?
Yeah, so my proposals are really informal. They're literally just an email exchange. You know, we will get on the phone, you know, at the beginning when they reach out to me, however they've discovered me, you know, so we will have a call where I really get to feel them out. They get to feel me out. So it's not straight about the project, you know, so I will spend at least 20 minutes, if not the whole call, you know, just getting to know them more personally and then booking another call to talk more about the project. So yeah, there is kind of that mutual vetting. And maybe this is unique because of the way people kind of come into my ecosystem. It's kind of whispered about and they don't even really know who I am. And that's kind of, I mean, for some people, it's alarming. You know, they have no idea what they're getting into. So yeah, it's really kind of that mutual vetting, then really kind of talking about the project, being walked through it, you know. And at this point, you know, a lot of the clients I work with are, I mean, the projects are fairly similar. There are some, you know, product launch formula type online launches, some evergreen webinar type launches, some ask method type launches. And you kind of really start kind of understanding the ecosystem of that type of project, and asking questions that they probably didn't even think about, you know, before, like, you know, how many segments they're going to be writing for. Just kind of gathering those essential details, you know, when they'd like to launch by, how many partners they have, you know, and just really helping them shape out their needs. You know, don't assume that your client knows what they need. They might know what they want. You know, they know what they want as an outcome, but, you know, as a copywriter or, you know, a launch strategist or marketing consultant or whatever you're bringing to the table, it's really up to us to take that leadership stance and help draw that bridge for them, you know, between where they're at and the outcome they're trying to generate and the outcome you even see them capable of generating. So yeah, you know, I'll really kind of start with that outcome they're striving for, and then really reverse engineer it for them. And that's really going to be what shapes the brief and the deliverables. You know, that's rarely something that, I mean, some clients know exactly what they want. You know, Amy is obviously really good at what she does and she knows exactly what she wants. But I'd say that most clients, you know, it's really up to us to really kind of outline what they need and draw that up and then cost it out according to, yes, I mean, value-based costing, knowing that, you know, they're going to be working towards a certain financial outcome, and you could pretty much gauge the plausibility of that. You know, it really is important to also gather their capacity for generating that. So knowing, you know, how many people on their email list, knowing how many partners are involved and what partners those may be, knowing if they have a Facebook ad specialist on the team, knowing what internal resources they have to really pull it off. And if you doubt that they could even really come close to those projections, that's where it really becomes a bit dicey, you know, a bit dicey. And you have to kind of really either take a step back and really know that, okay, like, for what it would take for me to write this project, it's probably going to be too high relative to what they're going to be able to generate. But once again, that's not your problem. You know,
you're saying, you know, like if I'm selling a $10 ebook, mm-hmm. you know, for you to put together a 30 piece email sequence at, you know, I don't know how much you charge for that. Let's just say $15,000 or something like that. Mm-hmm. There's no way I'm ever going to make that investment back.
Right. And that's the point. Yeah. I mean,
but if I'm selling a $2,000 course, you know, the kind of thing that maybe Amy Porterfield is doing. Exactly. At that point, you know, now I only need to sell 7 or 8 and I've covered
exactly. And those are really the ones you want to work on, you know, where you could charge your $15,000 or $20,000 and feel great because they're making $1 to $2 million. You know, those are really right. The ones where you get, you know, rewarded really well and feel like you've given amazing value, like where you could have maybe even charged $50,000 and it still have been extremely worth their while. But so yeah, I'd say really kind of the biggest thing is taking that leadership role in that process, really mapping out their needs with them, because ultimately, you know, we have to take ownership of what we're great at and what we deliver and offer. You know, we are strategists. You know, yes, we might be being hired, or they're only trying to hire out for the mechanics of writing. But I think the way you give more value and the way you really kind of grow as a copywriter and more than a copywriter is in your willingness and your confidence to lead that process. And maybe that comes with experience, but I think it's something that a lot of us could do a much, much better job in, is just kind of being willing to take the lead on that and really kind of help fill out kind of what they're going to need to get that result they want. So,
Rye, thank you so much. We're kind of at the hour, and I know we need to jump, but I think that we would like to have you back every month or every quarter if no you're kidding. Game. Can you just talk to us all the time?
Let's do it. Let's just set up daily.
We'll have to add Rye as a third partner to the podcast.
Yes, yes.
Hey, Rye, we usually end with telling people where they can find you, but with you, that's a little bit of a problem because you're not out there. You're ungoogleable.
Your phone number.
Yeah, so. Should I drop it? I'm actually going to drop it. 1-514-947-4395. Seriously.
Ooh, yeah. You did it.
I did it.
Wow. Serious inquiries only, right?
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, like, if you're calling, the code, like, for me to actually entertain the conversation is you need to come in with an Australian or a British accent. that's my way. That's my link tracking, actually. You know.
Oh my gosh.
That's my link tracking.
That is too funny. But seriously, you're not on Twitter. You don't have a website.
No. So I do have a website that's being built right now. Depending on when this goes live.
What?
Yeah, I know. Crazy, right? Yeah, and I mean, I could talk all about kind of what inspired that, but that could be a whole other conversation.
Next time.
We definitely need to talk about
but,
that.
But that's going to be ryeschwartz.me. And yeah, it should be live by right before Christmas. So depending on when people are listening to this. Christmas 2016, because I know this is going to have like an 8-season run. And
yeah, absolutely. Everybody's going to be listening to this for decades. You know that.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm going to be sharing this with my grandkids and Rob's great grandkids.
So. Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Cool.
Thanks so much for your time, Rye. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, Rye.
Thanks, guys. Really, really appreciate it.
You've been listening to the Copywriter Club podcast with Kira Hugg and Rob Marsh. Music for the show is a clip from Gravity by Whitest Boy Alive, available in iTunes. If you like what you've heard, you can help us spread the word by subscribing in iTunes and by leaving a review. For show notes, a full transcript, and links to our free Facebook community, visit thecopywriterclub.com. We'll see you next episode.